Support for KMUW's Into Music podcast comes from McClelland, reminding listeners that Frank Sinatra coined the word skibbity in Strangers in the Night, which you can listen to in their downtown Wichita showroom. More info on McClelland's innovative sound, lighting, and video technology can be found at maxsound.com.
Hi, I'm Jed Bodwin, and you're listening to Into Music from the KMUW studios, part of the NPR Podcast Network. My guest on this episode is Taylor Bickett. Her new album, Nothing I Can't Undo, is her debut full-length release. Her 2022 song, Quarter Life Crisis, became a memorable part of the TikTok landscape, eventually earning her 45 million streams. This new LP finds Bickett, who above all else is a storyteller, examining the aftermath of relationships that sometimes seemed permanent but never were, the desire to embrace new situations and identities, and the power of being true to oneself. She recently spoke with me about the LP's themes, about developing her artistic vision, and what she's learned in the process of co-writing songs. That's Taylor Bickett on Into Music, coming up now. When did you know that you were basically going to make this album?
Well, I think I kind of felt like it was a natural next step. I had done a bunch of singles and I'd done two EPs, and I really wanted to challenge myself artistically to create like a full project. So it was just kind of in my mind, I should make an album. But I don't think I knew quite like what exactly was going to be on it or what the themes were going to be until later. I think after I had written a good amount of the songs, I sort of looked at like my favorites of all the songs I'd written over the past like year and was like, okay, what fits, what works, how, like, you know, what's cohesive and feels like me and like my first album, what I want to say. So I just, it kind of all came together sort of. I think the first song I wrote that is actually on the project, it was in January 2024. So it's been like 2.5 years now, which is crazy. I mostly like recorded and did everything in fall of 2025. That's when I kind of put it all together.
Yeah, speaking of that thematic element that is very strong there, the relationships and
all the ups and downs.
Yeah.
Simplify it.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. So that seems like it was important to you to have some kind of like unified thing happening.
Yeah. And it's not like a story or like super strict, but I felt like when I kind of took all the songs as a whole and also just like the place I have been in my life and the place I was when I wrote the songs, it felt like there were certain themes that just kept kind of rising to the top. And I think the biggest ones were the ideas of like attachment and permanence and indecision, like figuring out your life in your 20s. I think it's really common, but it sort of manifested for me in like a desire to like run away from everything and start fresh, I think. Like, and so I sort of had that simultaneously going with the fact that like I want to be in love and I want to be in a stable relationship. And how can you have both when you're trying to explore and be adventurous and then also like settle down and find something real? So I feel like that kind of dichotomy exists in a lot of the songs, whether it's about like my life or my relationships or both. Yeah, I just kind of felt like that encapsulated the whole thing. And so the album is called Nothing I Can't Undo, because that song, it actually falls like right in the middle of the album. And it feels like it's sort of just talking about my tendency to not want to set anything in stone, keep everything open, undoable, you know, be able to like pull one thread and it can all just kind of fall apart if I want it to, like commitment issues in a more like general sense. And I felt like I felt that thread throughout a lot of the songs on the project.
Yeah, there's like this midway point, I think, where there's this group of songs that seem to really work well off of each other in terms of the ideas that you're exploring in them. And again, not that they're purposely connected, but it works very well, I think, in that kind of middle cluster.
Thank you.
Yeah. So that leads me to the other thing, which is that all important thing when one makes an album is the sequencing. So what was that process like?
It was interesting. I went back and forth A lot, just really overthinking it, but I feel like what I landed on was sort of what I started with, which is like, I kind of had a general idea, then I overthought it for like months, and then I came back to it and I was like, this is right, actually. But it's sort of a sequenced, not necessarily chronologically in my life, but like chronologically and sort of a process of emotion. Like, I feel like I have sort of these songs about general of like what I want and figuring out who I am, and like that kind of is kind of at the beginning, and then I feel like by the end, like the last two songs specifically are a bit more like I'm like I don't know. There's like more resolution to them, and I feel like some of the more like romantic songs sort of follow. Like I have a song about a really terrible relationship, and then sort of like later in the album, it's like, this is why I am the way I am, because I've had bad relationships. And then it's like, after it, it's like, but I'm learning to not, let them control me. So it's like, they kind of flow together and they kind of stand on their own. It's, yeah, I don't know. There's not like a strict order, but I just felt like a natural pull to what the flow would be. And I can't really fully explain that, but it happened that way.
Venice, which closes the album, I love the way that that closes the record out because it is this sort of like taking stock of everything and then, the character in the song, whether it's you or somebody who's imagined, it's like, okay, what's their next step? So we're like seeing them on the precipice of this next thing.
Yeah, no, definitely. That very much from the moment I wrote it, I think I knew that was going to close it out. I almost, because it's not really like, it doesn't follow a similar structure to the rest. It's like two verses and then another section and then the song's over. It's not like, oh, verse, chorus, like a song typically. And so I feel like I almost sort of wrote it as an outro. And I messed with making it longer or making it more like standard form, and I kept coming back to like the more simple, because yeah, it felt very natural to close. It's sort of more positive, and it's like, yeah, taking stock of everything that's happened and what you want from life for sure.
How much do you kind of play songs out when you're in the process of writing or thinking about making an EP or an album? Just kind of get a sense of how they go over? Or do you kind of keep them to yourself until.
I show like my close people songs that I'm really excited about. And then it's interesting. There are certain songs on this album that I didn't share with anyone until I went to record them. And I don't know why. I think I was worried that someone would have an opinion on it that I didn't want to hear, because I felt very strongly. Like the song Gold Star in particular, I didn't show it to anyone because I think it's very personal and vulnerable. And I also felt like, I don't care. I don't care if y'all hate it. It is important to me, and I'm gonna put it out. So, and it's funny too, because when I finally shared it with like my family and friends, it was like one of their favorites, because they know me and they like know my heart. And but yeah, I think that. So it really depends. But like, for example, the song "Driving in the Dark," I've played that at almost every show I've played for the past like year, because I just love playing it live, and I feel like it just kept going over well, so I just kept playing it. So that one, I've been anticipating the release for so long. And it was also the first song that I wrote for the album. It's like the earliest song. So it really depends who I share and, what I share with whom.
I want to come back to that tune specifically in a second, but something you said, I remember reading something a long time ago about writers need to know when to listen to other people, but also when to ignore them. And I love what you said about like, I'm just going to take this song and keep it for myself. I don't want to hear from anybody else. And I think that's a wonderful example of like, yeah, sometimes you got to trust your gut and not open yourself up for
Yeah.
anything.
And I'm not so good at that a lot of times. So it's, and I think that is like growing as an artist. Yeah, I have realized more of like when it's time to trust I think as like a person that like struggles with anxiety and indecision and overthinking things, I have a tendency to want to show a million people and then take all their opinions and then put them into some sort of graph and get exactly the perfect thing to do. But that I'm learning more and more to try to just trust my gut. Just as an artist and as a writer and all those things.
Because you never know. I mean, I can think of times that I've heard a friend's song or I've heard them read a short story or poem or something, and I go, I don't know that one, And then it becomes the thing that everybody else loves. And I was wrong, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it happens all the time.
Yeah. So it's like, I don't want to be the person to, you know, squash that. Yeah. So you mentioned Driving in the Dark. And that one I thought had such an interesting lyrical approach, because there are times on this record where you really go into some darker places. As you're writing, are you thinking like, wow, that's, I'm saying something kind of heavy. Do I want to push into that? Or?
Yeah, I think Driving in the Dark and then the song that directly follows it, Wild Dogs, both which were released as singles, are kind of like the darkest songs on the album. I do really go to sort of like a visceral place. And it's sort of the first time for me in my discography going there. But they're also like some of my favorites, I think, because they just feel so like raw and real. I think, yeah, with Driving in the Dark specifically, I wrote the verse, the first verse and pre-chorus, and was just kind of like, didn't know where to go with. I wrote that by myself. And yeah, felt like it was very heavy, but I was reflecting on a very like tumultuous, toxic relationship that had like sort of consumed my life for a long time. And I was writing about it after the fact, like a year and a half or something after the fact. And I was just reflecting on it. I was like, wow, that was ridiculous. What was I thinking? It was, you know, it's like your first like real love and you get so caught up on it in it. And then when you sort of have other relationships and I don't know, experience the world a little more, you're like, oh, how did I think that that was, I don't know. You like, I don't know. There's a tendency to think of that first big love as like your lifeline, like you can't survive without them. And then like when you enter into a more stable and healthy relationship, you're like, oh, we're both individual entities and we come together and it's great. And we're not like this like sewn together, like, you know, just ridiculous mess. That's not what love is supposed to be. And so I was sort of just reflecting on that. And I wanted to get across the fact that it felt like it really felt like life or death. And looking back, I realized that it wasn't, but it's like what you perceive is your reality. So in a way it was. And I really thought that this person, like I couldn't live without, and no matter how miserable we made each other, we had to be together because it was fated or something. So I feel like, yeah, I wanted to lean into that intensity because it accurately reflected how I felt about it in the moment. But now looking back, so it's like, the song is sort of both in past tense and in present tense. Like it's putting myself back in the shoes of who I was in that relationship. But then there are certain lyrics that are sort of, I mean, no, it's not subtle, being like, this was terrible. I just kind of, I allowed myself to go there. And I wrote it, I brought it to Jensen McRae, who is a super talented songwriter and just a friend, but also someone I've like admired for a long time. And I thought, you know, if anyone could help me like really nail down the specific emotions and like the lyricism required of the topic, I felt like it was her. And so she definitely like helped shape that a lot.
There is something about when we get into routines, whether it's in a romantic relationship or even a friendship, right? Sometimes where it's like, yeah, this just really isn't fun. Why do I keep doing it?
What are we doing? Yeah, totally.
And then, yeah, and then you just like, you're like, oh, I can't imagine this being any different. And then one day it is, and you're like, hey, you know what? Actually, I'm fine.
Right.
Yeah. But I think we all kind of need those reminders, you know, that, you know, yeah, sometimes you can let go of something and it's going to be all right. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious, like in Nashville, with so many writers, and I know co-writes are kind of a big thing, is that something that you do a lot of?
I do, yeah. Actually, this album, all the songs except for Gold Star, are co-writes. I wrote them across like four different cities. I was like LA, London, Nashville, and New York. I was doing a lot of traveling and I lived in New York for 6 months. I was really just like figuring my life out. And so that was kind of cool because I wrote with a lot of different like artists that I really admire and like songwriters and some of my friends who I've been writing with for a long time in Nashville. So it was sort of a mixed bag. I really do like co-writing, but I I find it important to like carve out solo writing time. That's sort of like how I started writing my first few releases, and a lot of my songs have been solo writes. And so I want to stay true to that and like what the things my brain creates sometimes like in a vacuum. But I also feel like I love to collaborate and have people introduce me to new ideas or get me out of my like tunnel, my one track mind. And I found that really helpful. Most of these songs, I think I've sort of brought an idea that I started at home and then brought it to people and they've helped shaped it, which I think worked really well. It kind of kept my like specific voice alive in it, but allowed like, for others to kind of add their just, I don't know, just expand it creatively and not just keep it in the box of Taylor and what I am thinking and, just bringing in outside opinions, I think is really helpful.
Does it happen sometimes though, where you get in a room with somebody, you might admire them and you might have talked beforehand and you're both really stoked on whatever you're bringing, but it just doesn't click?
Absolutely. Yeah, that happens a lot. And it's hard not to get discouraged by it because it doesn't mean you're not a good writer or they're not a good writer or you don't work well together. It's just like sometimes it's just not clicking. Yeah, and there are some people that you can think are so good, but for some reason your types of writing just don't gel. Or it's just the day or whatever. Yeah, that definitely can happen. And that's why I think it's important, I don't know, not to put so much pressure on each co-write, like not going and being like, this has to be a song I release or it's a waste of time. Because I've definitely gotten in that mentality. It's like we're in this like capitalistic mindset of like you just have to go and produce. But I feel like that really limits you and it puts too much pressure on things and it can sometimes like derail or like tank the session that could have gone well. So yeah, it definitely happens. I try to just be like, you know what, it's part of the process. But it's hard.
Sure, I would imagine too in that sometimes you go in and like you were saying, maybe it's not something that's going to be released, but the process of writing with that person and what you come up with, there's something that's been learned in that. Like, oh wow, like that person's great at writing courses. I didn't know writing a course could be so easy or, something like that.
Yeah. Or like, oh, this, maybe if I don't even release the song, but the specific type of sound or the production that we used, maybe I should like explore that aisle more in the next stuff I create or something. I don't know. It's all part of like the fabric of your artistry.
That's great. So this album is going to come out in July, Nothing I Can't Undo, and it looks like you're going to be taking to the road quite a bit over the next couple of
I am.
months.
Yes, this fall. Going my first like full US tour. I've done a couple headline dates here and there, but never like full tour. So I'm very excited. It's like September to November with a little break in between. But yeah, really looking forward to that. Gonna play like all these new songs and like some of my old ones. And yeah, I'm stoked.
You've been listening to a conversation with singer-songwriter Taylor Bickett. Her album, Nothing I Can't Undo, is out July 17th. You can learn more about it and see Bickett's current tour dates at taylorbickett.com. You can learn more about this podcast and all programming on our station by visiting our website, kmuw.org. Send us your questions and comments at info@kmuw.org. And find all the latest programming notes on that website as well. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you next time. And as always, we'd like to remind you that our theme music is composed and performed by Torrin Anderson.